every regulation put forth by the Slayer Society. If you have a question, this book contains the answer. It's a Slayer's most valuable tool. It's also where you'll make notes about vampire encounters. There's a journal section at the back. Once a year, you'll get a fresh copy. Keep up on those notes. The Society deems every bit of information to be extremely valuable. Now, Abraham said, a shadow passing over his face, one that sent a cruel chill down Joss's spine. Shall we begin? Joss was about to ask what they would be beginning exactly, but there was no time. Abraham lunged at him, grabbing him by the throat. As Joss gasped for air, clutching his fingers, Abraham seethed. When you're out there on your own, no one will come to your rescue. No help will come. You'll be on your own, fighting against an almost impossible foe. Defend yourself, Slayer. Before Joss could ask how, Abraham shoved him back by the throat and Joss fell to the ground, almost howling from the pain in his back, coughing wildly, trying desperately to get air into his lungs. He stayed there, crouched in the undergrowth, until his coughing had subsided, then looked up at his uncle, whose eyes were filled with pure disgust. Defend yourself, because this time I will not stop, just as our enemies will not stop. These monsters won't cease in their attack just to spare the life of a young boy. They kill all humans, young and old, grandmothers, infants. They are evil incarnate, and we are mankind's only hope of protection. If you won't defend yourself, how can you be counted on to defend the entire world? Now defend yourself! Abraham shot his arm forward, aiming for Joss's throat. He connected, but this time, Joss managed to wriggle from his grasp before he could get a good grip. Joss rolled away from him, his back screaming, and hurried to stand. His throat ached, but he wouldn't give Abraham the chance to grab it again if he could help it. He faced his uncle, eyeing him down, wondering what Abraham would do next or how far he would take this lesson of defense. Would Abraham go so far as to put his life in danger? He examined his uncle's face for a moment before nodding. Yes, he thought. Abraham would kill him before he'd let Joss leave a coward. Without warning or words, Abraham flew across the clearing and attacked Joss, punching him in the gut, the side, the jaw. He hit Joss solidly in the center of his wounded back, sending Joss all but crying as he fell to the ground. They know your weaknesses. They can read your thoughts, and they will exploit both. Abraham raised his fists again, and Joss's heart raced. He panicked, curling into a ball as if by closing in on himself, he might escape his uncle's attack somehow. Then he held his arms up in front of him, trying his best to block the skilled blows. Neither helped. Abraham growled as he beat bruises into Joss's flesh. Show me what you're made of, Slayer! Defend yourself! Pain shot through Joss's side as Abraham's fist connected again, and Joss cried out, forgetting about the wounds on his back entirely. He was almost certain he'd cracked a rib that time, and was definitely convinced that Abraham wasn't about to stop. Like he'd said, he'd continue, just like a vampire would continue. Joss swung his arm back, balled up his fist, and brought it forward as hard and fast as he could manage. His knuckles grazed Abraham's jaw, but just barely. He swung again, this time with the left, and connected. Abraham rubbed his jaw and stepped back. There was no emotion on his face.
That's it for today.
Abraham turned and moved down the trail, leaving a blinking, confused, wondering Joss behind. Joss looked around at the clearing, blinked some more, and hurried to catch up with his uncle.
What do you mean? We're done?
Abraham's steps didn't even slow as Joss reached his side.
For today, yes. I suggest you grab some lunch.
Joss rubbed the aching muscles of his lower back as he walked. The last thing he wanted to do was to question his uncle's methods, but he didn't really feel like he had much of a choice.
But, Uncle Abraham, what exactly was the point of that?
Abraham sighed.
I set out to teach you a lesson today, and it's clear you've learned it, so we're finished for now.
They'd reached the bottom of the hill, and as Abraham stepped up on the porch, Joss said,
What was the lesson, exactly?
You had to come to understand that your opponent will never stop unless you fight back. And you did.
Joss bit the inside of his cheek absently. It seemed to him there were probably better ways of teaching someone that lesson, but he couldn't argue with age-old traditions that had apparently been proven time and time again. Still, the urge was in him to do just that. Abraham met his eyes, a look of approval on his normally stern face.
Get some rest, and prepare for a long day tomorrow. I suspect that lesson won't come as easily.
Chapter 14. The Lies We Tell.
Use more black, Joss. Otherwise you look less like the forest and more like the Hulk.
Patty's tone had a hint of laughter, but Joss could tell she was doing her best to keep it contained. Joss dabbed his fingers into the black creme and rubbed crude lines onto his cheeks. Patty's camouflage was flawless, but when he looked in the mirror, all he saw were several colors smudged all over his face in no particular order, like a kid who'd gotten into his mother's makeup. He sighed heavily, hoping the lesson would soon be at an end.
Is this all there is to camouflage, playing dress-up?
As soon as the words had crossed his lips, he regretted them. Luckily, if Patty had felt the sting of insult, she didn't let it show. Instead, she smiled and handed him a moist towelette. As he rubbed the greens, browns, and black from his face, she said,
Actually, the most important aspect of camouflage is hiding our sounds, and at times, our scent.
He reached for another towelette, having destroyed the first, and said,
How do you do that?
Patty began gently removing her makeup as she replied,
Well, to hide our sounds, we learn to be light on our feet, watch where we step. Scent is a bit more complicated, especially when keeping our scent hidden from vampires. They can smell our blood, determine that we are human, even detect our blood type. So we can only mask it so well.
How?
You may regret asking.
Patty sighed, capping the small dishes of makeup as she spoke.
Suffice it to say that death helps to mask it.
Joss furrowed his brow, confusion filling him.
I'm not sure I get your meaning.
How can I put this delicately?
She sighed again, this time looking to the ceiling of the dining room as if the answers were written there.
I can't. So, the truth, then. Gross as it may be, basically, if you rub yourself with a dead animal, it throws vampires off your scent.
Joss's stomach turned slightly, nausea seizing him.
That's disgusting.
At this, Patty chuckled.
Well, there's always dung, but it doesn't work as well. Besides, you'd be amazed what you'll resort to when a monster is hunting you and closing in.
He mulled this over for a bit, wondering if she was right. What was it like to be hunted? Would he be desperate and afraid? Would he resort to methods of hiding that he currently deemed beyond his limit of tolerance? He was still mulling this over when Abraham opened the back door.
Joss, outside. We have hand-to-hand combat to practice.
Patty muttered something about beating a lesson into Joss, but when Abraham flashed her a certain look, she packed up her camouflage tools in silence. She moved out of the room quickly, without a further word. Joss was sorry to see her go. Despite his frustration with applying makeup, he'd really been enjoying their time together. But Abraham was waiting, an expectant look on his face. Something told Joss that the longer he kept his uncle waiting, the worse his training would be. That night, Joss stumbled down the hill in the darkness, his ribs screaming, his mouth filling with the sick, metallic taste of blood. He spat on the ground twice, but still couldn't get the taste out of his mouth. It was hard to navigate the dark woods, but somehow he managed to find the cabin's back steps. With a groan, he stepped up onto the worn wood, pausing only when he unexpectedly heard a voice. Cat's voice, in the darkness.
Joss? Are you okay? Oh my God, what happened to you?
He turned slowly toward her, images filling his head of just what had transpired to put him in this state. He'd been called to training early in the day, and Abraham had begun working him over, stopping only to catch his own breath. They'd fought for hours until Joss had passed out from the pain, and then Abraham had started it again and again until Joss had become convinced that he would die if his uncle didn't stop. Abraham's final words to him before he released Joss from the torment he called training had been,
Now you've learned how to take a beating, what it feels like to truly hurt. Because we've covered two lessons, you can have tomorrow off.
And Abraham was right. Joss had learned his lessons. He now knew exactly what pain was and how unmerciful someone could be if they wanted to. And he knew how to take a beating, which really wasn't something he could take credit for. For one, Abraham had refused to let him leave. For two, every time he considered making a break for it, Cecile's face would grip his imagination, and he'd turn back to face his uncle head on. Lessons learned, if not entirely engraved upon his being.
Joss, what happened?
Her eyes were so full of concern, so wide and fearful of whatever it was that had hurt Joss in this way. He could barely stand to look at her. He didn't deserve her pity or her friendship.
It was a mountain lion, Cat. Just another stupid mountain lion.
He turned and opened the back door, then shuffled inside, all the while wondering where Cyrus kept the bandages. To her credit and Joss's relief, Cat didn't follow him inside. There was also no sign of the other slayers as he rummaged through the medicine cabinet, looking for something to clean and cover his wounds. After knocking over several jars, bottles, and small boxes, he located a small tin of Band-Aids, a tube of Neosporin, and a little brown bottle labeled iodine. Part of him was almost certain the Neosporin would be the right choice for all of his scrapes and cuts, but he could vaguely recall his mother using iodine on his knee when he'd scraped it learning to ride his bike a few years before. After putting everything neatly away, he left his choices on the counter and took a long, hot shower. The water burned on his skin and felt like knives on his wounds, but it was healing somehow to feel that pain. Maybe there was something to that whole purification ritual after all. Maybe Joss was learning the right way to be, and in that, he might just find the strength to go on and to find peace. After he was clean, he turned off the water and stepped out of the shower, patted himself dry ever so carefully, ever so gently, and slipped his boxers back on. Then, loading his arms with his dirty clothes and medical equipment, he moved silently through the dark house and up the stairs to his room, where he changed into some fresh pajama bottoms and began cleaning his wounds. With a growling curse, he learned very quickly that iodine might clean your wounds, but it also feels like acid is eating its way through your flesh. Not to mention the delightful added bonus of dyeing your skin bright orange. With a grumble, he tossed the small brown bottle into the wastebasket and reached for the Neosporin. Gently applying it to the scrapes and cuts on his legs, arms, and chest, Joss counted to himself. 43. There were 43 visible wounds that he could find on his body, and who knows how many more on his back. And every one was worth it. Each scar, each bruise, was simply a check mark on the list of things it took to become a slayer. Joss was determined to move down that list as quickly as possible and to grit his teeth through every pain. There came a soft tap on his door, and Joss lifted his head, speaking just as softly as the sound that had invaded his nurse work.
Come in.
Cyrus pushed the door open and poked his head inside, his eyes moving quickly over Joss's injuries.
Cat mentioned you weren't feeling well. I thought maybe you could use some assistance.
Joss tightened his jaw. He didn't want anyone's help. In fact, all he wanted was to show his uncle that he was perfectly capable of taking care of himself, even after taking a beating like that.
No thanks. I've got it.
A look of immediate doubt crossed Cyrus's eyes, but he didn't give voice to it. He merely asked,
"You were out all day without any breaks. Are you hungry?"
Moments later, Joss was at the dining table, where Cyrus had placed a large bowl of chili in front of him. He may be perfectly capable of tending his own wounds, but the fact was that Joss hadn't eaten anything since early that morning, and his stomach had been rumbling its protests all day. Cyrus handed Joss a utensil and he dug in, spooning bits of steak, beans, and various peppers into his mouth. The chili was spicy but delicious, and Joss quickly polished off one bowl and then another. He was working on his third when Cyrus said,
"I need to go into town tomorrow for supplies. You're welcome to join me if you'd like. It's not far, but I'll need some extra arms to help load the truck."
Joss chewed another mouthful and swallowed before nodding.
"Sure. I have tomorrow off. I guess that would be okay. And Cat will be joining us. I hope that's all right." Cyrus filled the glass with lemonade and slid it closer to Joss.
I have a feeling you two could become good friends, given time.
Joss slowly set his spoon in the bowl and let Cyrus's words sink in. He'd never really had a friend before. With all the moving his family had experienced, it had been difficult for Joss to make friends. It would be nice to have a friend besides Henry, even though the idea of spending an extended amount of time with her sent his stomach into knots. Kat was bold, outgoing, and seemed to have no concern at all about asking him questions, and that was the last thing a guy on his way to becoming a slayer needed. Still, she was pretty nice and very friendly. He took a sip of lemonade and nodded to Cyrus.
What time should I get up?
I'll wake you at 7. We'll leave around 8. Cyrus stood and cleared Joss's dishes away.
By the way, I should warn you, Kat is a very curious soul. She may ask questions that you cannot answer.
Joss wiped his mouth on his napkin and looked at Cyrus, mulling over exactly how to phrase his next sentence.
To be honest, she already has.
Cyrus's eyebrows rose.
Oh?
Joss nodded.
She knows that we're not on some hunting trip, and she suspects that you and I haven't been completely honest with her, but I don't think she'll push to find out what's really going on. I have to ask, though, why did you bring her here? I mean, it seems like a really strange way to keep the society's secrets, bringing your daughter to a training camp.
Cyrus said,
every summer I leave Kat behind. As you can probably imagine, she gets very lonely. After all, she has only me. No mother, no siblings, just me. She stays with a friend of mine, but it's not the same as having family around. We exchange letters all summer long, but hers always grow more and more troubled as the time wears on. Then, a month ago, Kat tearfully made me promise not to leave her this summer. She didn't want to go to summer camp or on vacation with her extended family. She wanted to be with me. I couldn't promise that I wouldn't leave her, but I also couldn't abandon her again, not knowing how much it was hurting her to be away from me for so long. When you have children and you love them, it's impossible to refuse them, and even more impossible to knowingly cause them pain. So I brought her with me.
Joss furrowed his brow. He could only imagine how his uncle had reacted to the surprise news that a normal teenage girl would be joining them for the summer. He imagined Abraham's reaction had probably contained a string of obscenities. Cyrus smiled, as if guessing his thoughts. Abraham was furious, of course. He threatened to report me to the Slayer Society. Then I reminded him of a few secrets of his own that I am privy to, and he conveniently forgot my transgression. But if Kat finds out who we are and what we're really doing here, I will be reported and taken into custody.
Joss swallowed hard.
Without him even realizing it, his voice dropped to a whisper, and he leaned forward in his seat.
What would they do to you? If they're feeling kind, the society will simply excommunicate me. But if they're not feeling particularly forgiving, I will be punished.
The corner of his mouth tugged up slightly, as if Cyrus were trying to make light of a very serious situation.
How? I'd rather not say.
Cyrus waved his hand and shook his head.
You're young. You should cling to your innocence while you can.
Joss sat back in his seat, crossing his arms in front of him.
I thought you wanted me to have an honest view of the society before I joined.
I do. But some things you shouldn't worry about until you're faced with them, and hopefully you never will be. Cyrus met his eyes then, and Joss knew that the society would kill him for betraying them. His life would be the price of not keeping their secrets. How he'd be killed, Joss had no idea, but he imagined it would be in the worst way possible. Cyrus patted him on the arm and said,
It's time for bed. I suggest you take some Tylenol before lying down. Tomorrow, I'll take a good look at your injuries. Now get some sleep.
He nodded at Cyrus and yawned. He had no idea what time it was, but one thing was for certain. This was going to be the longest summer that Joss had ever experienced. Chapter 15. Early Morning Adventures.
Come on, little brother.
Creation smiled at Joss across the breakfast table. It was still dark outside, but technically it was morning. 5 in the morning. Joss had slept for maybe an hour, and he'd been tormented by Cecile's restless spirit the entire time. When he awoke, he was famished, and Cyrus had been happy to whip him up a nice breakfast. The house was quiet, but for Creation's voice.
It's time to play. Chaz and I are going to search the hills for that hive. Thought we'd bring you along for the ride, if you're feeling up to it.
Cyrus turned away from the stove then, and gave Creation a look that said Joss wasn't going anywhere. The look made Joss's heart sink. Truth was, bruised or not, he really wanted to get out there and do some training, to further learn what it meant to be a slayer. Creation put up his hands in surrender.
I swear no training, but he might learn a few things by tromping through the woods with us. Just for fun, I promise, Cyrus.
Cyrus seemed to mull it over for a while before pointing a finger at the three of them.
No maneuvers. His muscles need the rest.
Creation looked from Chaz back to Cyrus.
Can we at least go for a hike? He can watch me kick Chaz's butt in the clearing.
Chaz looked up from his plate briefly.
Hey.
Joss finished chewing a bite of breakfast and said, I want to go, Cyrus. I promise I'll be back before 8 so we can still go to town. Cyrus turned back to the stove without another word. Creation grinned. Chaz shoveled in another mouthful of omelet before standing and giving Joss's shoulder a healthy smack. Surprised into swallowing a bite of hash browns, Joss coughed, took a sip of orange juice, and hurried to clear his plate away. Just a few minutes later, they were in a clearing in the woods, and Creation was stretching his arms above his head.
The key to maintaining your strength is keeping your blood flowing, the muscles loose and limber, and the endorphins up. And before I head out on a hunt, I like to do at least 20 push-ups and get some good stretches in. It's a good habit to get into.
After watching Creation for a moment, Joss followed suit, stretching one arm over his head and then bending it at the elbow to stretch out his triceps. Creation moved closer as Joss began to bring his arm down.
You're not holding it long enough. You should feel a good burn. Count to 10, then release it.
A muscle in Joss's back started to cramp, but he brought his arm back up, refusing to show any sign of weakness to his fellow slayers. Creation caught his wince, though, and began to rub the muscle out for Joss.
Looks like somebody had a bit of a hand-to-hand with Abraham last night.
Joss shrugged, his back muscles losing their tension some.
It wasn't so bad.
Creation and Chaz exchanged looks that said they knew just how full of crap Joss was at the moment. Then Chaz chuckled.
I remember the first time I faced off with your uncle. I couldn't see out my left eye for a week. He has a hard right hook.
Don't take it personally, little brother. It may seem like Abraham has it in for you, but he's just trying to teach you the only way he knows how.
Creation slapped him on the back before turning to Chaz.
And go on. Give him your tips before I kick your butt.
Chaz rolled his eyes and turned back to Joss.
Despite what this meathead would have you believe, winning a fight is 70% mental and only 30% physical, and preparation is key. For instance, look at Creation and tell me what you see.
Joss moved his attention to Creation and frowned. All he saw was a formidable opponent. Creation flexed his bicep and beamed.
He sees perfection, of course.
A chuckle escaped Joss.
I see. I don't know. He's fit and bigger than I am.
Chaz nudged him with his elbow.
Look closer, Joss. What's he wearing?
Creation was dressed in jeans and a button-down shirt. On his feet, he wore a pair of ratty-looking sneakers. Before Joss could reply, Chaz leaned in close and spoke quietly so that their opponent wouldn't hear.
The materials are cotton, which can be forgiving, but jeans, a button-down shirt? Neither is a stretchy material, and both will inhibit his movement. Notice I'm wearing sweatpants and a loose tank top. I have a clear advantage over him in that regard. It may not be much, but it's something. And when you're fighting someone, you have to focus on the positive and keep your morale high.
Are you girls done whispering? I'd like to get to this today, Chaz.
A gleam was in Creation's eyes, one that told Joss that he loved a fight, even one between allies. Chaz shook his head, the corner of his mouth lifted in a smile.
Keep your skirt on. We're talking.
Joss had to hide his grin. It was hard to believe that he could become so broken the night before, only to find himself truly enjoying himself the very next morning, after hardly any sleep, and tortured sleep at that. Chaz said,
"Now, look around the clearing. There isn't much to see. No stones, no sticks. Not really anything that can be used as a weapon. But there's something we can use to our advantage. Any guesses what that might be? What do we have in abundance?"
Josh swept the clearing with his eyes. One thing stood out above the rest.
"Dirt? Lots of it?"
With a nod, Chaz said,
"And with a handful of that, an opponent can be momentarily blinded, long enough to escape or to subdue them in another way."
Amazement filled Joss. These were things he never would have thought to look for before. Who paid attention to what type of clothing an opponent was wearing, or what clever use of dirt one could apply? Only a skilled fighter, it seemed. Chaz straightened his shoulders and took a step closer to Creation.
"Okay, we're ready now. Or do you need a few extra minutes to fix your hair, pretty boy?"
Creation shook his head, a smile on his face, and rushed at Chaz. Before he could make contact, Chaz reached down and whipped a handful of dirt into Creation's eyes. Creation cupped his face and swore loudly, swinging blindly with his fists. Joss dodged out of the way, but kept a keen eye on the scene before him. As Creation stumbled, his eyes watering, Chaz whipped around him in a circle and caught Creation in the knee with his foot. An audible crack came just seconds before another foul word escaped Creation's lips. Breathless, Chaz beamed at Joss.
"And that is how you handle a loudmouthed buffoon with an attitude problem."
After allowing Creation a few moments to calm down, Chaz and Joss helped him to his feet. Joss wondered aloud,
"Think Cyrus will have enough time to bandage that knee before we head into town?"
Chaz glanced down at the affected leg.
"Cyrus will make time, I'm sure of it."
Through gritted teeth, Creation said, "Chaz, you are so dead the next time we face off, but thanks for teaching our little brother here all your dirty tricks. He'll need them."
Chaz and Joss exchanged smiles. Then they moved down the hill toward the cabin.
Despite the excitement, a yawn snuck up on Joss, and he stretched as well as he could with the grown man weighing down on his right shoulder. Maybe, he hoped, there was time for a nap before their trek to town. A nap, he hoped, without dreams. Chapter 16, Confronting the Beast. Joss studied the Slayer Society manual for a while, waiting for 8 a.m. to come. He hadn't slept, but just lying down seemed to be enough to rest him. He'd just gotten to an interesting chapter on drudges, or vampires' human slaves, when his stomach rumbled loudly. He bounded out of bed and headed down the stairs after a quick shower, a full hour before Cyrus said he'd wake him. He wasn't exactly sure what had filled him with the peculiar energy. Maybe it was the adrenaline rush of early morning training, but he was in a good mood, that much was for certain. He mused that maybe it was the fact that his uncle had been enormously challenging to him in the past few days, and Joss had been man enough to rise to the occasion, something that likely surprised Abraham as much as it did Joss. But part of it, a small part he was certain, was probably because he'd get to hang out with Kat today. And even if the very idea of friendship scared him, he was kind of excited about the mere possibility of having someone to call his friend. Even if she did ask a lot of questions that he couldn't answer. Even if she was a girl. Cyrus turned his eyes toward Joss as he made his way into the kitchen. Joss shrugged.
"Any way I can get another omelet before we go to town?"
"Not a problem. It's good to see you have an appetite."
Cyrus quickly, but happily, set an omelet pan on the stove and started organizing his ingredients. Joss grabbed a small glass from the cupboard and poured himself some orange juice. As he put it to his lips and sipped, he looked across the room to Cyrus, who was busying himself at the stove.
"Easy to have an appetite when you cook such great food, Cyrus."
A smile settled on Cyrus's lips as he turned to face Joss.
"Thank you, Joss."
Cyrus made him the most delectable cheese and ham omelet known to mankind, along with a side of crispy hash browns. Joss had just swallowed a second mouthful of hash brown goodness when he cast a glance around the room and noticed that no one had joined them or even shuffled through the house since he'd been downstairs.
"Where is everyone?"
Cyrus shrugged as he filled the omelet pan with soapy water to soak for a bit before washing. Our fellow slayers have already started their day. Joss chewed thoughtfully for a moment. But where did they go? What do you all do when there's not a new slayer around to train? The air around Cyrus seemed to fill with tension, as if Joss were entering into semi-dangerous territory, but Joss couldn't understand why. He was just curious. When Cyrus spoke, though, it was casual and calm, without the smallest hint of tension. Maybe Joss had been reading too much into it. After all, he had been going through a lot lately, and getting a read on others' emotions when you've been run ragged is too much to ask of anyone. Cyrus was fine. It was just his wildly overactive imagination, probably. They're searching for a hive. That's what we call a base of operations for creatures of the night. There's been evidence over the years that the hive is somewhere in this area of the Catskills, but we haven't narrowed its precise location down yet, I'm afraid. Joss scooped another forkful of the delicious, steaming omelet into his mouth and chewed. The cheese was so hot that it almost burned his tongue, but he couldn't help but eat more. His parents' idea of cooking was calling the local pizza joint. Apparently, McMillan's can do anything except cook. His mom used to make a mean French toast, but hadn't done that since Cecile had died. What happens when they find it? Cyrus was quiet for a while. He'd rinsed all of the pans and loaded the dishwasher before answering. The strange air of tension was back, and Joss began to wonder if Abraham had been onto something when he hinted at Cyrus's lack of loyalty to the cause. He wondered if it were possible, when one was older, if one decided that belonging to the society was no longer in their best interest, to leave, to walk away from slaying forever. He doubted it very much. Likely, the only way out was through death's dark door. The thought sent a shiver up his spine. Cyrus met his eyes. He looked exhausted, as if the subject were one he was tired of dealing with on a regular basis. The hive will be set aflame. Any vampires who manage to escape will be destroyed. Why? Curiosity filled Joss. Not that he disagreed that the task was necessary. He just wanted to know why exactly they were killing the beasts and not caging them up like animals at the zoo. Why? Cyrus sighed deeply. That, my friend, is a dangerous question. Questions, in fact, are all dangerous to ask of the society, but why is perhaps the most dangerous of all. You'd do well not to wonder why we do the things we do, Joss. Your job is not to question. Yours is to follow orders. Why can get you in a lot of trouble. Joss felt the fork slip from his fingers, but couldn't make himself grip it. He was leaning forward in his seat, eyes locked on Cyrus, who seemed so close to telling him something important. He parted his lips and said, Cyrus, did you ask why? Is that what made you change your mind about the society? Cyrus's eyes were very dark. He looked troubled. It wasn't the why that did it, I'm afraid, my young friend. It was the reply I received. What was the reply? But it was too late. Cyrus broke away from the darkness and smiled a pleasant smile over Joss's right shoulder. Good morning, Cat. Care for an omelet? Cat flopped into the chair next to Joss and laid her head on the table. Joss got the feeling she wasn't much of a morning person. If by omelet you mean Mountain Dew and a Snickers bar, I'm totally on board. Cyrus shook his head and reached for a clean pan, the hint of a smile on his lips. An omelet it is.
But Cyrus, her voice was full of a whiny tone, I don't want eggs and cheese. What I want is sugar and caffeine.
He cracked two eggs into a mixing bowl and picked up a beater. That's not a healthy diet, Cat. You should eat a better breakfast, something high in protein, and omelet is just that. She narrowed her eyes. You're one to talk. Joss found his fork again and continued eating. There was a clank on the side of the bowl as Cyrus dropped the beater and turned to flash his daughter that don't-mess-with-me parental look. The silence between them seemed to stretch on forever. Joss filled it with chewing his food and hoped that the awkward quiet between father and daughter would soon pass. It did, once Kat sighed dramatically and returned her head to the table. Cyrus went back to cooking, tossing shredded cheddar, chopped onions, and diced bell peppers into the bowl. As he mixed the ingredients together, adding in bits of smoked ham and pepper jack cheese, he said, "Maybe we can pick up some Mountain Dew while we're at the store today." Kat turned her head toward Joss and smiled, then sat up again.
"So, what kind of supplies are we picking up today?"
Cyrus sprayed the pan with Pam and poured the egg mixture into it. "All kinds. Dairy, dry goods, meat, fruits, and vegetables. I'd like to get enough to get us through another 2 weeks if possible. The men eat quite a bit, as you can imagine, and if I don't stock up, I'll be running into town every 2 or 3 days." Joss finished cleaning his plate, took it to the sink, and rinsed it. As he turned to Cyrus, he said, "Do you want me to make a list so we don't forget anything?" Cyrus flipped the omelet over with a spatula and nodded. "A novel concept, Joss. I was going to rely on my memory, but memories cannot always be trusted." Joss grabbed a pad of paper from the counter and listed as many basics as he could think of, like eggs, milk, and cheese. Cyrus added to the list, indicating how much of each they'd need to get for 2 weeks. By the time he'd reached the end of the list, he and Kat were adding their own list of supplies.
"I think we could use 6 pounds of chocolate and a gallon of something heavily caffeinated to wash it all down, don't you?"
Joss laughed wildly, wiping a tear from his eye. It was almost as funny as the 2-story-tall bag of marshmallows he'd added just moments before.
"A gallon? You're thinking too small. This has to last us for 2 entire weeks. We're going to need an entire drum of something heavily caffeinated."
Kat tilted her head thoughtfully.
"Does Mountain Dew come in drums?"
This gave Joss pause.
"I'm not sure."
He also wasn't exactly sure where the Slayer Society got their funding for such things. Houses, food, medical supplies. Who paid for it all and how? He'd approached the subject with Malik before but hadn't gotten a straight answer, so his impression was that it was, frankly, none of his business. Not yet, anyway. Cyrus had finished quietly cleaning up the kitchen and turned back to them at last with a bemused smile on his face.
"If you two are quite ready, we need to get into town. And no, I'm fairly certain that Mountain Dew does not come in drums."
Once outside, they piled into Cyrus's truck and Kat put a scratched-up CD in the stereo. She turned the volume up really high and Cyrus turned it back down a bit so their ears wouldn't bleed. Joss wished very much that he could say he'd heard of the band they were listening to, but honestly, he had no idea who they were and why they seemed so determined that some guy named Bela Lugosi was dead. 20 minutes later, they pulled into the sparsely populated area that Cyrus kept referring to as town, and came to a stop in front of a small market that looked as though it had seen better days. Joss looked out the passenger side window at the sticker-covered glass door and shook his head. It was highly doubtful that this small shop would have everything they needed, let alone a drum of Mountain Dew. He opened the door and stepped out, ready for a disappointing shopping trip. Cyrus looked over the list.
"Kat, you head over to the eatery and pick up muffins, bread, cookies, and crackers. Make certain you get 2 cheesecakes and maybe some sandwiches for tonight, if they have enough. I'm going to run a few errands and meet you both back here in an hour. Joss, you're in charge of the rest of the list. Feel free to pick up a few treats for you and Kat."
Over Cyrus's shoulder, Kat mouthed,
"Mountain Dew,"
and brought a smile to Joss's face. Cyrus glanced back at her with a question in his eyes before withdrawing $several hundred from his wallet and splitting it between the two of them.
"Try to keep it under an hour, okay? Let's make it snappy and get back to the cabin before lunch."
Joss gripped the list in his hand and pulled open the glass door to the store. As he stepped inside, a rather hairy man behind the counter grumped,
"We got no meat today."
At first, Joss blinked. Then he wondered briefly whether or not he looked like the kind of person that desperately needed a steak or two. He looked at the man and said,
"Okay,"
before proceeding farther into the store. He looked over the list again and was surprised to find things like oranges and bananas in such a small shop like this, in the middle of nowhere. He could see only 5 aisles, but each of them was packed to the brim with items on Cyrus's list. There were no shopping carts to speak of, so Joss took his time filling one small hand basket after another until he'd piled 10 of them on the counter for checkout. The grumpy-looking man scanned everything and bagged it into 6 brown paper sacks. As he took the money from Joss, he spoke again, his voice only slightly less grumpy than before.
We'll have meat tomorrow, if you're interested.
Though he was extremely tempted to ask the man what it was about him that made him look like a guy with outrageous carnivorous needs, Joss merely nodded and retrieved his bags.
Thank you.
Someone that he couldn't see opened the door for him, and though he almost dropped all of the bags on his way to the truck, he somehow managed to set the bags in the back unscathed. After he did so, he breathed a loud sigh of relief and looked around the small parking lot. Cat and Cyrus were nowhere to be found. He waited a while before ducking his head back inside the store and checking the time. His shopping had taken just 40 minutes, so he was a bit early yet. At the corner just up the street was a small tented booth containing a table piled high with baked goods. Joss wandered over and smiled at the two little old ladies sitting behind it in lawn chairs. The rounder, blue-haired woman nudged the thinner, gray-haired one and smiled.
Oh, isn't he precious? He reminds me of Bertha's boy. What's his name? Terence? Or do you mean Thornton? No, the other boy. You know the one.
She smiled broadly at Joss and nodded.
You look just like him. Any relation?
Joss had to fight a chuckle. I'm sorry, ma'am, but I don't even know anyone named Bertha.
Oh,
her smile deflated some.
Well, that's a shame. Bertha's very nice. In fact, she usually donates to the bake sale every summer. Of course, this year she's sick with something awful over at the hospital. What's she got, Emmy? Bronchitis, tuberculosis?
The other woman shook her head.
I don't know. Something awful, that's for sure.
I hope she feels better soon. Joss swept his eyes over the bags of cookies and various saran-wrapped yumminess. What's the bake sale for?
The blue-haired woman puffed out her chest with pride.
We're raising money for our library. Would you care for a brownie? They're only a quarter.
Joss's ears perked up. He loved libraries. Nowhere else in the world felt so safe and homey. Nowhere else smelled like books and dust and happy solitude quite like a library did. Do you have two brownies?
We have four. How many would you like?
As he walked away with all four brownies in his hands, Joss felt a peculiar warmth spread through him. In a strange way, coming to the Catskills for the summer had freed him and given him something that he couldn't find within his own quiet home life. He'd found a challenge in Abraham, a mentor in Cyrus, a friend in Cat, and a strange sense of belonging in the sleepy little town of Phoenicia. And he was liking it more and more here. Yes, Abraham at times seemed to have it in for him, but he knew if he could just keep chipping away at that frosty exterior, he and his uncle could bond in a way that he had never been able to bond with any of the McMillan family, not even his cousin Henry. And yes, Kat was nosy and bossy, but she was also super funny and incredibly interesting. Joss was full of so much hope for the future, he felt his chest might burst. Then he turned his head and saw a familiar face peering out from behind the funeral home across the street. Dark, brooding. The face of a killer. It was the vampire who'd attacked Kat just 2 weeks before. Well, not attacked, exactly. But it had chased after her. It had scared the daylights out of her and had made him shake from the inside out. What was that thing doing still lurking around? It clearly knew that Cyrus was a slayer. Why stay in a town where people were out for your blood and hunting you? Why not move your so-called hive to a safer location? Joss didn't know. Couldn't even fathom something resembling a sensible reason for putting your life in danger like that. But he was determined to find out. Plus, he had been training lately, and his skills were developing nicely. Even Cyrus had said so. And what better way of impressing Uncle Abraham than taking down a vampire on his own just days into his training? Joss walked over to the truck and set the brownies inside on the dashboard before turning back to where he'd seen the monster lurking. As he approached, he kept a close eye on his surroundings, carefully making sure that he wasn't being followed. After all, he was fairly certain he could handle one vampire, but any more than that and he'd be toast. He moved around the corner of the funeral home as silently as possible, but it turned out there was no need for sneakiness.
The vampire was sitting on a stump as if awaiting his arrival. It smiled at Joss as it rubbed sunscreen on its skin.
It's warm today, my slayer friend. I've had to reapply sunscreen twice already, and it's not yet noon. It would be no wonder to me if the sun chases me inside by early afternoon.
Joss stood very still, saying nothing. He hadn't expected the thing to attempt a conversation with him, let alone a casual, friendly conversation about the weather. The creature finished rubbing sunscreen on its skin before capping the bottle and slipping it in its inside jacket pocket. Then it smiled at him again. He could see no sign of fangs, but knew that they were there somewhere, lurking within its monstrous mouth. It looked so human, so normal. But Joss knew that it was anything but. He could feel the corner of his mouth twitch as he parted his lips to speak. Even as he did so, he wasn't exactly certain what he was going to say. He only knew that he had to say something, so it would know why he was here.
So we meet again.
Great, Joss. If that wasn't the most stereotypical response to a mortal enemy, he didn't know what was. But it was out there now, hanging in the air between them. To his greatest disgust, the monster visibly suppressed a smile. Of course it was amused by his antics. It had probably faced slayers like Abraham and Cyrus. What threat could a boy spewing cheesy movie lines possibly provide? The vampire met his eyes, and again Joss was stunned by how distinctly human it appeared. If he hadn't already witnessed this monster's fangs once before, he might be doubting his actions now. The very thought was unnerving. It removed its jacket and placed it casually on an old stump to its right. Before Joss's training, he might have dismissed such an act as nothing notable at all. But now he knew better. It was preparation for a fight. The fabric might inhibit its movement slightly, and it didn't want to get its jacket dirty with Joss's blood. Joss casually glanced around the yard, noting areas of escape, back around the side of the building, into the woods, or through the open window. Few options and none of them smart choices, but there were weapons available. A small hatchet was stuck in a nearby log, sharp branches lay strewn about the edge of the yard, and a hose was attached to the back of the building. Maybe he could wash away the sunblock and let the sun take care of his work for him. The point was, there were options, and Joss was seeing those options, something he took great pride in. When his eyes found the vampire again, it was perching on the stump, its hands folded in its lap. Perhaps it was excited about the idea of feeding from him and trying to keep its hands from trembling. Joss didn't know. All he did know was that judging by the sounds and sights and smells around them, they were alone. It smiled warmly, like they were old friends.
I wouldn't be a gentleman if I didn't ask your name, boy, so what do they call you up there in that house in the hills?
It knew where he was staying. Where they were staying. Joss swallowed hard at the realization. After the briefest of pauses, one to consider whether or not answering the creature could possibly compromise himself as a slayer or the society as a whole, he said,
Joss, and you are?
He didn't think admitting his name would compromise them. After all, it was just a name, right? It wasn't like he was revealing deep society secrets. The monster clucked its tongue, shaking its head.
Curious about a vampire, are you? Abraham would be disappointed, to say the least. He doesn't believe we even have names. At least he's never cared to learn mine. May I ask why you're so intrigued?
Joss shrugged. I wouldn't be following protocol if I didn't find out everything I can about your kind. Plus, I'd like to have a name to give when I report to my uncle this afternoon. It leaned forward, a bemused sparkle in its eyes.
And just what will you be reporting, Joss?
Joss leaned forward too, his jaw set.
That I found a vampire lurking around Phoenicia and killed it.
Its eyes widened in surprise, and bemused laughter boiled over within it. Joss could feel the insult and anger threatening to take him over, but instead, he managed to stay calm and breathe deeply. Are you going to give me your name, or should I just refer to you as Number One? Its smile quickly faded, replaced by fury at Joss's insinuation.
Look, boy, I'm over 600 years old. 623, to be precise. You should be mindful of who you threaten.
What? When the monster blinked at Joss, he said, I should be mindful of what I threaten. After all, you're not a person. You're just a thing. An animal. A monster. The creature paused for a moment before nodding slowly, as if agreeing that they were at an impasse.
Zai. My name is Zai.
Joss nodded, bracing himself for what he knew was coming.
It's time to perish, Zai.
The creature nodded once more, a dark shadow passing over its eyes, one that Joss regarded instantly as a fusion of hunger and pure, unadulterated hatred.
If you insist, Joss.
It moved so fast that Joss had no time to react. All of his plans, his forethought, came crashing down around him as the monster gripped him by the throat and slammed him down on the ground. The back of Joss's head met with the earth harder than he could have imagined, and for a moment his vision was blotted out in various sizes of black polka dots. Then the thing leaned in close, close enough for Joss to smell the metallic hint of blood on its tongue. It had fed recently.
If you're wondering why I've allowed you to live this long, it is because I have a message for your uncle. A message that I cannot deliver to him personally without risking my life or his. And so I'm tasked with giving this message to the weakest in that Slayer crew. You, my dear boy. Joss, as it were, I'm not so prejudiced that I refuse to acknowledge your name. You, Joss, will deliver this message to Abraham, and I will let you live for now. Are we clear?
Joss tried to wriggle free, but he couldn't move as much as an inch. The beast had him pinned. It gave his throat a threatening squeeze, and his vision wavered. It was a warning. Don't move. Don't even blink. Out of sheer terror that this might be his last moment on Earth, Joss obliged. His heart beat in his ears so loudly that he feared the monster's words would be drowned out by the sound of it, and he wouldn't know what message he was supposed to deliver to his uncle. But the vampire waited. It looked as if it was listening, until Joss's heartbeat settled some before it began to speak again.
Tell your uncle that we are well aware of their activities here, and they have reached the edge of our patience. We are giving them, you, exactly 1 month to pack up camp and leave. If you do not comply, we will skin you all alive, starting with you, my dear boy. Tell him this, and mean it. If they do not adhere to our wishes, I shall find you and rip the skin from your bones myself. Do you understand?
A fleeting, empowering thought entered Joss's mind then. The Slayers must have been getting close to the hive, too close for comfort, and that's why the threat was coming now. It released its grip on Joss's throat, and he sucked in a lungful of air before nodding. He wasn't sure that he could have spoken at that moment. His throat burned painfully, so it might not have been possible. Not to mention the fact that he was also terrified that if he did speak, it would come out in a high-pitched shriek rather than the calm, strong tone that a Slayer should use. Saying anything would completely crush any amount of false confidence that he had left, so he stayed silent.
If you're smart, you'll stay here until I've gone. Count to 10, then return to the truck. Tell no one but Abraham the message that I have bestowed upon you. If you're not smart...
It peered down on him, tilting its head to the right, as if it were examining his features and committing them to memory. Then it clucked its tongue.
Well, let's just hope you're smart, Joss.
As quickly as it had taken Joss down, the thing disappeared again. The thought briefly crossed Joss's mind that he should follow it, track it, but he pushed that thought way down deep inside of him in a box marked Stupid, Dangerous Ideas and closed his eyes, counting to 10, and thanking the stars that he was still alive. Chapter 17. Secrets to Share. The trip back to the cabin was long and silent on Joss's part. He could sense that Kat knew something was off about him, and every time she'd look out the window, Cyrus would cast him a glance that was full of questions. Is everything all right? Are you okay? Did something happen while we were apart that I should know about? He didn't have to ask the questions aloud. Joss could read each and every one on Cyrus's face and in his eyes. And to each one, Joss gave him a look that he hoped would answer him in the most broad and general manner possible. Everything is fine. I'm fine. There's nothing to talk about. Each silent reply was a blatant lie, but a necessary one. He felt terrible for lying, albeit silently, to Cyrus, especially since Cyrus had been nothing but a good friend to him since the moment he'd arrived. He told himself that he'd explain everything to Cyrus later, after he'd passed on the vampire's message to Abraham. But even that only managed to comfort him a little bit. So he looked out the window and watched the trees as they wound their way up the mountains to the grand house that they all referred to as a cabin. As his eyes fell on the house, he marveled at the lies they told each other every day. It was a cabin, not a grand spectacle of a house. They were just friends and family, gathered for a summer of hunting and cookouts. They were just regular people, like those in town. The only danger lurking in the woods was a mountain lion. Lies. All lies. And each one had been so easy to tell. The thought made him feel somewhat queasy. The truck came to a stop and Kat slid out the passenger side door. She loaded three bags of groceries into her arms and headed for the house without another word, but Joss could tell she felt cut off from something, from him. He instantly hated that he had to make her feel that way, but there was little he could do about it. Not without exposing the entire Slayer society, that is. And even though he hadn't been a part of their group for long, Joss felt a growing sense of loyalty to them. He belonged to them, believed in their cause. They were good and just and right, and more than that, they were his path to laying Cecile's tortured soul to rest, which was worth the cost of any friendship. He got out of the cab of the truck, noting the distinct absence of his uncle's car, and closed the passenger side door. Cyrus was waiting for him near the open tailgate.
"What's happened, Joss? You seem troubled, shaken even. So badly that even Kat noticed. What is it?"
Joss reached for a bag, but Cyrus placed a firm hand on his forearm.
"Joss, tell me. Please, I'm concerned."
He shook his head.
"Not yet, Cyrus. I need to speak to my uncle first. Then I'll tell you everything you want to know."
After a moment, Cyrus nodded and released his grip, though something in his eyes told Joss that he was reluctant to do so. They each grabbed several bags and carried them to the kitchen. As they entered the house, Cyrus called out to a few of the slayers, and soon the truck bed was completely empty, the groceries tucked neatly away. Once they were finished, Kat disappeared out the door and Joss took his seat on the front porch, hoping that his uncle would return from wherever it was he'd gone off to. The burden of the vampire's message weighed heavily on him, so heavily that it consumed his thoughts, filling his head with dark, murky clouds. He ached to be free of it. Joss lost himself for a while in the pages of the Slayer Society manual. He absorbed rule after rule, and absorbed the message of loyalty and justice. There was an insistence on protocol, of following the correct channels to report any interaction between himself and vampire kind. There was also a list of punishments for those who dared to defy that protocol. Ugly, awful things. Joss didn't envy the man who went against the society, but he knew the rules were important to their cause. After all, rules were in place for a reason. Without them, the world would fall into chaos. In the journal section of the manual, Joss noted his encounter with Zai, every detail. He waited for his uncle for what seemed like an eternity. 2 hours later, headlights lit up the house as Abraham's car pulled into the parking space beside Cyrus's truck. Joss waited quietly until his uncle left his car and made his way to the house. Abraham's steps slowed when he noticed Joss on the porch, but it was Joss who spoke first.
"I have a message for you, Uncle."
Abraham eyed him keenly for a moment before responding.
"What an